chapter 5. And Josh Sonka, are you able to flip me over?
Thank you, sir. Let's see, is it gonna... So, here's the deal. We're going somewhere with this lesson this morning. I promise you, it's going to be somewhere good. But to get where we're going, we got to lay some groundwork first. And it may not be the most exciting beginning, okay? Stick with me. We're going somewhere, it'll be somewhere good, okay? So, we're talking about servanthood, right? We're talking about being servants. We're talking about the necessity of serving. And the question we need to begin with is very foundational, fundamental. I need to turn on my talker. What we need to start with, there we go,
is just a simple question. Why should I even want to serve God? Is there a reason to serve God? Why in the world should God be any sort of priority in my life? And that's what we want to begin by talking about this morning. Romans chapter 5 is where we're going to start. And we're going to start by making three very, very fundamental, very simple points, and then we're going to get on to something a little bit, maybe deeper, and something a little bit, maybe something very pertinent. Okay? Let's start with this. I should want to serve God because of God's love for us. We've sung about that already this morning, right? God loves us. That's one reason we should want to serve Him. The people that we love, we're willing to serve. And the proper response to service is service in return. God loves us. We ought to be willing to serve Him. You're there with me in Romans chapter 5. Let's talk about God's love for a second. Look at Romans chapter 5 and begin here in verse 6. Paul writes and says, "For while we were still helpless, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. For one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for the good man someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrates His own love towards us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, having now been justified by His blood, we shall be saved from the wrath of God through Him. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of His Son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by His life." You look at verse 6 there. You have a love for those unable to help themselves. That's what makes God's love so amazing. That here is God's love in verse 6 extended to people who are helpless, without strength, incapable to do anything for themselves, unable to take away their own sins, and yet who is there? There's God. And there's God making the provision for our sins to be taken away, making the provision for us to be redeemed, for us to be saved. There's something that's great about God's love. Look down with me to verse 8. It's not only a love that is for those who are unable to help themselves, but it is a love that is demonstrated. Have you ever heard somebody say, "I love you," but then everything that they do seems to be the opposite of love? It's like the husband that tells his wife, "I love you, and if anything changes, I'll let you know." Who just professes to his wife one time, "I love you," and then he goes out and does whatever he wants to do. Doesn't pay any attention to her, doesn't give her any time. Is that really love? Love is not love simply in name. Love is an action. Love is demonstrated, right? That's what makes God's love so amazing as well. It's a love that is demonstrated. Verse 8, God demonstrates His own love towards us, in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. It's a love that it's demonstrated. It's a love that is unprompted. Did we do anything to deserve God sending His Son for us? No, quite the opposite. We've done everything that demonstrates we're unworthy, right? But God still sent His Son. God demonstrates His own love towards us, in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. I should want to serve God because of God's love for us. Look at Hebrews chapter 5. We referenced this a little bit last night. Look at Hebrews chapter 5. We should want to serve God because of the example of Jesus. We should want to serve God because of the example of Jesus. We talk about being servants. We sang last night about being servants. And of course, the perfect example of service for us is Jesus, right? Isaiah chapter 42, other passages in Isaiah. That's how He's identified to us. He's identified to us as the servant. We talk about the servant prophecies that are all throughout Isaiah. That's talking about Jesus. He is our example. He lived a life of service, and we're supposed to live a life of service as well. Look at Hebrews chapter 5 and come down with me to verse 7. In the days of His flesh, He offered up both prayers and supplications with loud crying and tears to the one able to save Him from death, and He was heard because of His piety or because of His godly fear. Although He was a son, He learned obedience from the things that He suffered. And having been made perfect or complete, He became to all those who obey Him the source of eternal salvation, being designated by God as a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. You look at verse 8. Though He was a son, He learned obedience from the things which He suffered. Here you have Jesus being a perfect example of servanthood, because here He is even in hardship, and what's He still doing in hardship? Still serving God, right? What are some of the hardships that Jesus faced in this life? Okay, so this is the point where when I ask a question, you give a thoughtful response, right? Yeah? Good morning, I'm Tyler. I've taught most of you in Bible class before. It's wonderful to have you here today. Thanks for coming. Now wake up, right? I will call on people, won't I, Ms. Sutherland? I will call on people, right? What are some things that Jesus suffered in this life? Thanks, Tyler. What are some things that Jesus... That's a wonderful name, by the way. What's something that Jesus suffered in this life?
He was hated by many.
That's the kind of answer we're looking for. Thank you so much. You don't have to answer for the rest of the class. You're out of the way. What are some things that Jesus suffered? Go for it. He was persecuted. Very good. And you're Jacob's son, aren't you? I remember you. Do you remember me? Vaguely. Yeah, well, never forget a face. He was persecuted. He was hated. How else did Jesus suffer? What do you got, Mr. Zonka? He was tempted, right? Matthew chapter 4 is all about the temptation of Jesus. That's right. We see Jesus undergoing a whole host of different hardships, but what did He always do in the midst of those hardships? The hint is in chapter 5 and verse 8.
He obeyed.
That's right. He always obeyed, or to our point, He always served. He always served God, even in the midst of hardship. That's why when you and I have a hard time, when we're undergoing difficulty, when servanthood isn't easy, who do we look to? We look to Jesus. We look at the things that He suffered and how He endured, and we draw strength from that. Look at verse 9. And having been made perfect, or having been made complete, He became to all those who obey Him the source or the author of eternal salvation. His service, notice, completed His experience. He was perfected. He was completed in His experience by the things that He suffered and by His endurance. If suffering and servanthood was a part of the life of Jesus, guess what's going to be a part of our lives as well? Hardship, but also what? Servanthood. And if Jesus can come through it and come through it successfully, what can we do? Wild guess. We can come through it successfully as well. That's right. And notice back to verse 7. What were the keys to Him coming through the difficulties that He faced? What did Jesus do? He prayed. Right? Here's the Son of God Himself. Here is God incarnate on the earth. But what did He do while He was here on this earth? He prayed. And if He felt the need to pray, shouldn't we feel the need to pray as well? Shouldn't we find something there in prayer as well? We'll find in prayer a key to overcoming the difficulties and the hardships that we face. And his perfect experience then made him the source of eternal salvation to anyone who would serve him. He served God. Now we turn around and we serve him. It's this great picture and this great flow chart of service. Third, go to Acts chapter 14. I promise, stick with me. We're going somewhere, okay? Look at Acts chapter 14. Why should I want to serve God? Because of how God has provided for us. Look at chapter 14 and start with me in verse 14. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of it, they tore their robes and rushed out into the crowd crying and saying, "Men, why are you doing these things? We are also men of the same nature as you and preach the gospel to you, that you should turn from these vain things to a living God who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and all that is in them. In the generations gone by, he permitted all the nations to go their own ways, and yet he did not leave himself without witness, and that he did good and gave you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness." But even saying these things, with difficulty they restrained the crowds from offering sacrifice to them. You look at verse 15 there of chapter 14. Why is it that we should feel compelled to serve God? Is there anything in verse 15 that would indicate to us why we ought to serve God? Why we should want to serve God? He's powerful. Right, what did he do? There you go. He made the heaven, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Everything that we can conceive of, everything that we can see, everything that we can see in a microscope, everything that there is came into existence through whom? Through God. That testifies to us of his power, of his strength. And it tells us there's something significant about him that we should be looking towards. Look at this. Look at verse 16. Now notice this. We should serve God because of his provision for us. Look at verse 16. And this is kind of difficult, but I think you can flush it out. Verse 16. What has God given us? Verse 15, he's the creator that inspires us to serve him. Verse 16, what has God given us that should also inspire us to serve him? Free will. Did we go over this before? Or did you just pull that out on your own? I'm impressed. Good job. Especially with it being you, Tom. Right, free will, right? That's something God has given us. Think about this for a moment. You ever seen people who not only are atheists, but are kind of what we would call militant atheists? The folks who don't believe in God and they disbelieve in God so passionately, they're not going to be satisfied until other people disbelieve in God. You met somebody like that before? And sometimes they march around campuses, sometimes they march in city common areas holding signs, "There is no God, there is no God, there is no God," things like that. You ever engaged in conversation with a person like that? One really interesting thing to do is stop and ask a person like that, "Well, who is God?" And you listen to the kind of God they might describe, right? A God who in their minds dictates everything. Who's just kind of the puppeteer behind the curtains, right? Who's pulling the strings and who everything that we ever do, it's not really us doing it, it's who? It's God behind the scenes doing it all. Well, is that the God of the Bible? The God who just manipulates everything and does whatever he wants and we really don't have a role in it? Is that the God of the Bible? No. Do you believe in that kind of God? No. I don't believe in that kind of God. Would I agree with my atheist friend then that there is no God like that? Yeah. That's not God. Because you look here, as Tyler Pierce pointed out here in chapter 14 and verse 16, what does God give man? Free will, choice. You choose how you want to live your life. You choose what you want to do. Now you can choose to serve God, you can choose not to serve God, but in the end the choice is whose? It's yours. That's mine. It's the idea of, you sometimes hear it called free moral agency, right? We are free to make our own choices. There are consequences attached to those choices, but we have the free will to make our own choices. That's something God has given us. That's why we should want to serve God, because here is the Creator of the universe who has brought everything into existence, and He gives us the choice to do what? Be with Him or not. There's something to be said for that. Look at verse 17. Why else should we want to serve God?
He's left us all the evidence we need to know He's there.
He's given us witness, right? Verse 17, He did not leave Himself without witness, without evidence, without testimony. In that He did good and gave you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. Now, who are Paul and Barnabas talking to here in chapter 14? What kind of people? Are they talking to Americans? Okay, good. I got a response out of some of you there. That's good. No, they're not talking to Americans. Okay. So who's he talking to? What were these people trying to do? They were trying to worship men as gods. So these are people who are probably idolatrous, right? Pretty good guess there. Are these people who are Christians in the moment? No. Are they what we would call godly people? Probably not. But what did God still do for them?
He gave them a chance.
And He demonstrated Himself to them by giving them what? What did the verse say? What did verse 17 say? What did God give them? Rain.
That's good.
Fruitful seasons. Food. Things to enjoy. Who'd all that come from? Came from God, right? Is that something that only comes to people who are godly? No, that's what we would call, in kind of theological terms, what you call common grace. The witness of God across the whole world. Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God, the firmament shows His handiwork, right? God has left a witness, God has left testimony for Himself, even just in the general world that He's created. That's the reason why we should want to serve God, because of His provision for us. He has done stuff for us, and so that should prompt in us a desire to look for Him, to seek after Him, and to serve Him. So we should want to serve God because of His love for us. We should want to serve God because of the example of Jesus. We should want to serve God because of His provision for us. But here's where I want us to spend really the majority of our time. I want to submit to you that we should want to serve God because without God, life is meaningless. And this is where we're going to wade out in some deep water here. Is there purpose to life? Is there a purpose to this life?
Yes.
Brother Lawrence says yes. You agree with that? Yeah? We've got some shaking of the heads. Yes, that's good. Okay. So, what would you say is the purpose of life? Don't you go quoting Ecclesiastes 12 yet. Fear God, keep His commandments. Yeah, I know.
Sure.
To serve and obey God. Is that because we're talking about servanthood and you thought you'd work the word serve in there? Oh, I was going to give you credit. That'd be pretty good if you were. What you got for me, Hudgens?
Spread God's word.
Just spread God's word. That's a pretty good idea there. Does everybody in the world agree on the purpose of life? No. Right? Can you give me some ideas people have about the purpose of life? Make yourself happy, right? YOLO, right? You only live once, do it up right. What are some other ideas about the meaning of life? Hudgens again.
There's not.
We're just kind of here, we're moist robots, and eventually we decay, and that's it. We're dead like Rover, dead all over, right? Mick Junkins, you have something for us?
Wealth.
I thought you said well at first. I was waiting for you to finish your thought. But okay. Wealth, that's right. You got to make that money, right? Got to get paid. And that's the meaning of life. The more money you have, the more things you can do, and that's all good. Okay? Let's step back. And here's a quote from the American Atheists. This is from their website, atheists.org. What is the purpose of life? Here's what our atheistic friends would say. Materialism declares that the cosmos is devoid of immanent conscious purpose, that humankind, finding the resources within themselves, can and must create their own destiny. It teaches that we must prize our life on earth and strive always to improve it. It holds that human beings are capable of creating a social system based on reason and justice. Does that sound pretty good? Parts of it. How about that last part? Human beings are capable of creating a social system based on reason and justice. In general, does that sound pretty good? Do you want to live in a society based on reason and justice? I know I do. Okay? Generally sounds good, right? It teaches that we must prize our life on earth. Agree or disagree? Should we value human life? The fact that I'm not hearing an overwhelming response. Thank you very much. Yes, we should value human life, right? Should we strive always to improve human life?
Yes.
You know, in the past, if you're sick, you're sick, stay away from me, and if you die, that happens. Well, now we're able to do what? Now we're able to treat some diseases and illnesses, right? Should we be willing to treat those diseases and illnesses and try to eradicate them? Generally, yeah. Is that going to help people? Okay. So, some good things going on here. Humankind finding the resources within themselves can and must create their own destiny. That's the idea of what? What did you say earlier? Free will. You agree with the idea of free will? Yeah. But do you notice any problems in this? Does anything strike you when you read that? Especially considering the source from which it comes. Again, this is the statement from whom? The American Atheist Society, okay. You see anything interesting here? How about this? We must prize, and I promise you, that looks a little bit brighter on my screen. I didn't highlight it in olive. We must prize our life on earth. That's interesting coming from the American Atheist Society. My question would be, why? Why should we prize life on earth? If I'm an atheist, if there is no God, if I'm just the product of a process of evolution that began millions, if not billions of years ago, and that all we are, according to Hitchens and others, we are machines for the propagation of DNA, why should I prize life on Earth? What is there about Earth life to prize? What's significant about it? What's good about it? It kind of assumes too much, doesn't it? How about this? Just under that, we must prize our lives on earth and strive always to improve it. Question number one, why? Because we're only here for a while and then we're gone, and if atheist outlook and worldview is true, we've got a limited amount of time here, and then literally that's it. And there's no great draw and attachment to this world, because there's nothing beyond this life. There's no real point in this world and in this life. We should always strive to improve it. Here's my question. For whom? Now this gets somewhere. We should always strive to improve it. By whose standard of improvement is the improvement of life to be judged? That's a mouthful, but think about this. From the American Atheist Society, we should always strive to improve life on earth. Well, what's improvement? Am I going to judge improvement in life the same way that You know, somebody in Africa might judge the improvement of life. Improvement of life for me might be, you know what, AT&T and Suddenlink Communication charge a whole lot of money for a product that is not very reliable. And improvement in my life might be suddenly in American Airlines gets their act together. Is a person in Africa gonna have those same thoughts? Is that the improvement they're looking for? Well, and that's a real fundamental example. But by whose standards are we going to improve life? Right? Think about this with me. Atheist ethicists. A man named Alonzo Fife. We'll see a quote from him in just a minute. There's a movement within atheism that decries and mocks the idea of intrinsic value. That the idea that there is intrinsic value in humanity is silly to them. Why should life on earth be prized? And if life is to be improved, for whom is it to be improved? Is life to be improved for the child? Are we to improve life for children? Are we to improve life for adults? Right? Are we talking about more macaroni and cheese for everybody? Or are we talking about more steak for everybody? Or are we to improve life for the elder? You know, what's the big movement we're seeing right now with old people? You get old, you're too much of a drain on the system. What are we going to do? Brooks? It's all right. You get some. I appreciate the honesty and the candor. You get old people who are old and they're a drain on the system. What are we going to do with them now? Let them die. And not just let them die. What are we going to do? We're going to push them towards it, right? We're going to. The talks about euthanasia, right? Now we're going to make euthanasia maybe the societal decision, right? We're going to put them down because they're too old. They're too much of a drain on the system, right? They're the reason healthcare costs are so high. We're told. They're contributing nothing, so we get rid of them. Well, is that necessarily what the older people want? I mean, we could take a survey of self-identified older people in here and we could ask them. But I'm kind of thinking they're not so hot on being killed off, right? So, for whom are we going to improve life? Are we going to improve life for the child in the womb? Now, the answer from the American Atheist Society is what? No, they don't count. Well, why not? Do you see that these standards and these concepts are really, really arbitrary? That there's no real grounding behind them? They're just kind of there? That these are really nice platitudes? These are things that sound really good, but are they legitimate? Think about this. A social system based on reason. A social system based on reason and justice. Where do those concepts come from? Where does reason and justice come from? We're told that, you know, there was a community of thinkers years and years ago who sat down and came up with the rules of logic. Right? Like the law of non-contradiction. A cannot be A and not A at the same time. I cannot be Tyler and Kevin at the same time. I'm either Tyler or Kevin, but I'm not both at the same time. Well, the idea of the law of non-contradiction. I can't speak a word of English. Some of you, that just flew right over your head. And you're looking at me like, what? I can't speak a word of English. What does that indicate? But what did I do? Okay, so we've got a contradiction there, don't we? Thank you, Tyler Pierce, again, for your significant insights. Reason, where does it come from? Okay? Community of thinkers came up with it. Before this community of thinkers was ever on the earth. Give me a fact about the earth. Somebody just give me a fact about the earth. The earth is round, and even that's up for discussion now, right? But we're going to work with that, right? The earth is round. Before this community of thinkers was ever established on the earth, was it a true fact that the earth was round? Yes. So the community of thinkers did not come up with what? Well, the earth is round. That is, logic and reason are grounded in something other than this community of thinkers. They didn't come up. By what rules, then, did the community of thinkers come up with the rules of reason and logic? They just came up with it themselves. Well, by what rules did they do it? Do you see how this just becomes this kind of self-defeating argument? The atheist generally gets mad at the Christian for arguing in circles. What does the atheist do here? The very same thing. Alonzo Fife, we just mentioned him, right? Here's his quote. He says, if a person has the liberty to simply choose a purpose or a meaning, then this should be taken as proof that he is creating a fictitious entity. This purpose or meaning is no more real than the character she invented for some story or book. To live one's life as if this fictional purpose or meaning is real is to live a lie. According to this atheist ethicist, Alonzo Fife, is there any meaning to your life?
No.
Is there any purpose to your life? And if you concoct some meaning or purpose to your life, what have you done? You've just created a what? A lie that's there to kind of soothe your emotions, you know, kind of like a security blanket. But does it really mean anything? Is it real? No. Here's another quote from the American Atheist website. Materialism holds that our potential for good and more fulfilling cultural development is for all practical purposes unlimited. There's that word there. Good. What is good? To the American Atheist Society, what is good?
To not suffer.
But I want your stuff, Brooks. And if having your stuff is going to make me happy and not suffer, I might be willing to do what? Inflict a little suffering on you. So then is suffering always bad? Not if it's not happening to me. And that would ask the question, is suffering always bad? Is suffering always bad? How do you learn not to put your hand on the stove? You either listen to mom and dad say, don't put your hand on the stove, or like me, right, you go and you actually touch it, right? And then you learn, hey, guess what? Or cooking a DiGiorno pizza. Who in here cooks a DiGiorno pizza every now and then? Real fine dining, can you think? Yeah, right? And it's ready to go, and you pull it out of the oven, and what are you going to do? What do you got to check? Do you guys not cook DiGiorno pizzas? You got to check and see if the cheese melted, right? Because the last thing you want to do is cut into that pizza, take that first bite from the middle, and it's what? Ice cold, like a Hot Pocket, right? Okay? And so you're going to open the oven, and you're going to look, and the cheese is done, and what's going to happen? I know I'm not the only person this has happened to. You get the heat blast in the face, right? And hopefully, what do you learn? Don't do it again, right? Open it and wait a second and then look. But you're too hungry, so what do you always do? Peer in and get the heat blast. You're supposed to learn, right? Does suffering have a purpose? Generally, yeah. But we've got, you know what you're not going to find in this article? You're never going to find the American Atheist Society give a definition for what? For good. That's a problem. And how about this one? For good and more fulfilling what? Cultural development. But whose culture? Is it the quote-unquote Christian culture? What's the atheist going to say? No. Is it going to be the atheistic culture? Well, that might be the answer on the start. But then we start digging down and we've got guys like Alonzo Fife on one side who says that life is devoid of intrinsic value. But the quote that we just saw earlier was that life is full of meaning and we ought to live life to the fullest. We have some inconsistency there, don't we? Or we've got other atheists who are now starting to argue that some of the mental illnesses that we see in the world today are actually not really illnesses, but it's just human advancement to a higher degree where we're more focused on self and not as focused on the rest of the world. I promise you that's one of the big debates in atheistic communities right now. Well, we get this presentation sometimes that the atheists are all in lockstep with each other. Is it true? Not at all. And what is development? What is cultural development? Is it prizing human life? Well, not always. Is cultural development, you know, women's rights? Well, maybe, unless they're in the womb, and then not really. There are a lot of unfounded assumptions that go in this, and here's what I'm wanting you to see. You take God out of the picture, and we're going to hear good things like general concepts of good and intrinsic value and worth and cultural development and societies based on reason and justice. But what are the definitions of those things? And do you know what we don't get? We don't get that definition. These are words and ideas and concepts that sound good, but ultimately don't have much behind them. Here's what C.S. Lewis had to say in his book, Mere Christianity. Maybe some of you have heard of it before. He said, "My argument against God," C.S. Lewis used to be an atheist, "was that the universe seemed so cruel and unjust." He says, "But how had I gotten this idea of just and unjust? A man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line. What was I comparing the universe with when I called it unjust? If the whole show was bad and senseless from A to Z, so to speak, why did I, who was supposed to be part of the show, find myself in such violent reaction against it?" You can't call a line crooked unless you have some line to compare it to and know that that line is straight. How does C.S. Lewis begin to argue about the injustice in life without having a fundamental concept of justice? If there's no justice, then there's no what? Then there's no injustice, right? And if there's no good, then there's no what? There's no bad. Okay. Let's go back to what got us off on this discussion. We ought to serve God because life is meaningless without God. We began this section by saying that there is a purpose to life. And we said that that purpose in life is directly connected with our Creator. And indeed, that's exactly what we discover. The very first chapter of our Bibles, right? Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." God created man in His own image, in the image of God, He created him, male and female, He created them. Here is a powerful, personal God that brings humanity into existence. But then go beyond that. Micah chapter 6 and verse 8, with a powerful and a personal Creator, we have one who can reveal to us what good actually is. And to our original point, here is the service that God calls us to. He has told you, oh man, what is good? Well, let's answer the question real quick. What is good? And don't read the verse to me. I know what the verse says. But what is good? You ever thought about that before? What is good? How do we know what good is?
Through God.
Through God. That's the only way we can come up with the concept of reason and justice and goodness. Is through God. Good is because God is. We learn what is good by learning who God is. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. There's a lot more to it than that, but that gets us started. We've got a universal God, and that universal God gives us universal laws, and not only that, He gives us a reason to follow the universal laws. The conclusion when all has been heard is this: fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, including everything that is hidden, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Here is a universal God giving us universal laws and giving us a reason to follow those universal laws. But then beyond that, you come to John chapter 3 and verse 16. The universal God has demonstrated His love and His goodness and His laws to us in the most impactful way possible. He calls us to Himself through His Son that He sent and through His Spirit. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Most assuredly, I say to you, unless one is born of water and spirit, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. We have a God who lives. We have a God who, because He lives, establishes for us what reason and justice and goodness is in this world. We know good. We know justice. We know right. We know reason, because God is. We should want to serve God because He loves us, because He sent His Son for us, because of the example of Jesus. But we should want to serve God because without God, life is meaningless. And there are answers to questions that we will never find without Him. I appreciate your good attention this morning. We went a little bit long this session. We'll make it up in the next session. But thank you so much for being here. Take a 10-minute break. Is that right? Take a 5-minute break. We'll start back at 10:45. Thanks, guys.